Hi, this is Mark Cuniberti. You're about to listen to another edition of our award-winning economic show entitled Money Matters. The information given on this show is obtained from a variety of public sources and is deemed accurate at time of airing but is not guaranteed. This show is pre-recorded at an earlier date, so market indices and related stock market references may not be accurate at time of airing, and we will not be taking any listener call-ins. Thanks again for listening. Now enjoy the show. Please be advised that the views and opinions expressed on this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult your investment professional before making important investment decisions. I am an investment advisor representative through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. The views expressed are my opinions only. They do not necessarily reflect those of Cambridge, KVMR, its staff members, or underwriters. And welcome to the 224th edition of Money Matters. My name is Mark Cuniberti. Thanks for joining me today. Money Matters is about money, as money does matter, and the matters of money affect us all in some way or another, whether you have a lot of it, a little of it, or none of it. It controls our economy, our country, our planet, and some way or another controls the very way we live our lives. It's about your money, your lack of it, or abundance of it. It's about our lives and livelihood. In short, Money Matters is about you. And so, well, seems recently every time I come on the air, we've got something to talk about. And the markets, and the Dow is down 361 at 16,545.23. A few shows back, we'd mentioned the Dow had touched in August, I believe, 16,300. And ran to 17,000, 17,300, 17,500, about 17,800. And mentioned on a few past shows in the last few months that, although no one can tell you where the market can go, a possible retest of the 16,300 low we saw in August was possible. So, is that in play? Well, it looks more in play than it was in play on the last show. So, we shall see whether my suggestion that 16,300 was possible will come true or not. For sure, the sell-off is been rather relentless. A lot of things have happened that people are saying may have caused a recent downturn again. Of course, the Federal Reserve increased interest rates about 0.25%. In December, that kind of looked like it started it all. And then we had some stress in the high-yield junk bond market. Interest rates were starting to rise a little bit. And ongoing problems in some economies overseas. And now the Chinese stock market, which had looked to kind of stabilize in the last few months, dropped 7% on Monday, another 7% on Tuesday. And that has bled over. Oil has continued to drop. Remember I mentioned be careful what we wish for in low oil prices and low gas prices? Well, it's continuing to go down. And all those things together are obviously making investors a little nervous. Gold is up a tad. Gold is 1109.70, so it's breached the 1100 level once again. So that is one of the technical areas. Once you get over 1,100, there are more, of course, all the way up and all the way down. Support levels on the way down. resistant levels on the way up. Obviously, gold is reacting to investor nervousness. And, of course, the potential problems over in North Korea with what's his name, claiming he detonated a hydrogen bomb. Thought man was all through with that. Apparently not. You know that an atomic bomb uses fusion. You know, if I got that right, a hydrogen bomb uses fission. And to detonate a hydrogen bomb, fission requires a much higher amount of energy to get it going. So to detonate a hydrogen bomb, you must detonate it with an atomic bomb. That's the detonator. Go figure that out. And as mentioned last show, in a move that sent shivers through Wall Street, Third Avenue Management took the rare step of freezing withdrawals from its $780 million credit mutual fund. Now, we hadn't seen something like that happen since last crisis. Beginning of 08-09, the Reserve Primary Mutual Fund made a similar move by freezing redemptions and reducing redemption value by 3 cents. Usually you have mutual funds par at a buck. You put a buck in, you get a buck out. But a money market fund, you expect to get the buck out. Well, Reserve Primary Fund in 08-09 said we're only going to give you 97 cents. And BNP Paribas SA also sparked a global financial crisis during the same time by freezing withdrawals from three investment funds they had because it said it couldn't fairly value their mortgage holdings. So it was a rare move by Third Avenue Management and was instigated as bond portfolios consisted mainly of high-yield debt, commonly referred to as junk bonds. They felt that they could not fairly value them. With junk bond yields soaring and investors selling off high yield, management of Third Avenue felt it could not or would not sell off its assets at fire sale prices to meet redemptions. Could be another in a plethora of problems that may be materializing in the junk bond high yield market. When high yield tends to sell off when markets get jittery and with many high interest loans made to energy companies who now face the music due to plunging oil prices, a wave of energy-related defaults may be stressing the bond market. Outflows from the U.S. high-yield bonds markets are running at the fastest pace in more than a year, and yields on this market has jumped 35% from June 2014. As people dump junk bonds, yields or interest rates on bonds go in the opposite direction. They go up. So, as bond prices plunge, funds that hold these high-yield or junk bonds tend to lose value, resulting in dropping share prices. This can make a vicious cycle where, as share prices drop, more investors sell, causing share prices to decline even further. And with oil prices still continuing to plunge and stock markets falling again, even more companies may find it hard to make their payments on borrowed monies, especially the energy companies, since oil continues to fall there too as well. Keep in mind that the junk bond high yield market is where the riskier companies have to go to obtain financing. That's why it's called junk. High yield. You have to pay more interest to get a loan. This market was thriving. It was thriving because the interest rates are near zero, so investors are looking for yield. An argument could be made, and indeed has been made by this analyst, that the ultra-low interest rates set by the Federal Reserve and indeed central bankers around the world had encouraged investors to seek out higher returns. And some of those returns had been sought out in the high-yield junk bond market. Investors and pension funds and retirement accounts had invested in high yield, and this massive influx of capital seeking these higher yields placed billions in junk bonds in the hands of investors, and retirement plans, pension plans. Sometimes they're masked under the term of high-income funds or other enticing names. Sometimes investors don't have an idea they hold IOUs from risky companies. You might look at your portfolio. And if it says high yield or income fund, it's a possibility you may have some junk in there, high yield junk debt as it's called. I'm not saying it's junk. I'm saying that's the name they give it. I wonder why that is. And so now that the price of oil is at historic low levels, again, these companies are having a hard time making ends meet and paying the loans. With rising defaults, the mass influx of capital into the high-yield market may now be slamming in reverse with the mass exodus. This exodus is real, and the yields are rising. If funds continue to flow out of the high-yield market, large losses may be in store for investors who hold these junk bonds. It's also possible the high-yield fallout spreads contagion, that magic word, to other types of bonds and even stock markets such as we saw in 08 and 09, where fear in one market led to the sell-off in many others. High-yield bonds are traditionally thought to be the first to sell off when investors perceive risk in markets. They are the proverbial canary in the coal mine. Do you hold high-yield bonds in your portfolio, mutual fund, or pension plan? Perhaps it's time you ask your investment professional and find out exactly what it is you own in your account. And are they aware of the potential danger possibly brewing in the high-yield debt markets? Might be a good question to ask. Yeah, I ran across an interesting article from Bill Bonner from the Daily Reckoning, dailyreckoning.com. Entitled, Four Dicta for Reading the Financial News. Bill Bonner says, quote, after 3 decades in the business and writing our daily chronicle of the stock market and economy, the Daily Reckoning for 10 years, we have now distilled our advice down to 4 dicta. 4 basic truths to guide you as you navigate your way through the financial news. Dictum number 1. People do not get what they want or what they expect from the markets. They get what they deserve. Of course, people would like the downturn to be over. Many are counting on it. But the market doesn't give a hoot. He's got a capitalism at work t-shirt on and a sledgehammer in his hand. What's he up to? He's demolishing a quarter century's worth of mistakes. So says Bill Bonner. I like the way Bill Bonner writes. The economic model of the last quarter century caused more mistakes than usual. There are always mistakes made, of course. Investments go bad, businesses go under, people go broke. When many mistakes are corrected at once, it's called a recession. And when an entire economic model goes bad, it's called a depression. The economic model of the last quarter century, claims Bill Bonner, caused more mistakes than usual. It encouraged people to spend, borrow, and speculate. And each time the market tried to make some corrections, the authorities came along with more money and easier credit. Businesses that should have gone under years ago keep digging themselves in deeper and deeper. Homeowners kept running up more debt and speculators kept taking bigger and bigger gambles. Fish gotta swim, says Bill. Birds gotta fly and bubbles gotta blow. The bubble in the financial sector, including subprime debt, housing prices, bonuses on Wall Street, and derivatives, hit the fan in 2007, and what a mess. And why shouldn't it be? Which brings us to the second of our dictum number 2. The force of the correction is equal and opposite to the deception that preceded it. The delusions and absurdities of the bubble epoch were monstrous. Naturally, the correction must be huge as well. World stock markets were nearly cut in half post-2008. Property prices, too, have been knocked down almost everywhere. The total loss of nominal wealth has been estimated as high as $50 trillion. Could these losses have been prevented? Certainly many of them could, says Bill. If the U.S. Congress had never created Fannie Mae, for example, it would have never distorted the mortgage market as much as it did. And if the Fed hadn't created the Federal Reserve Bank, it couldn't have provided so much ready money for so many speculators and borrowers. And if the Fed under Alan Greenspan had done what it was supposed to do, that is to take away the punch bowl before the party got out of control, the bubble in the financial sector would have been much more modest. The Fed's low lending rates said, step on the gas, and Congress helped push down the pedal. Of course, people drew all the wrong conclusions they brought. They thought that capitalism had failed. They saw the car drive off the cliff, but didn't notice how government had twisted the road signs. Instead of warning investors of the dangerous curve ahead, the Fed's low lending rates said, step on the gas. Congress, despite their recent collective cry of disbelief, helped push down the pedal. Which leads Mr. Bonner to dictum number 3. Capitalism doesn't always take an economy where it wants to go, but it always takes an economy where it ought to be. Whoever was responsible for the mistakes, capitalism went about correcting them with its customary elan. It hit imprudent investors with trillions in losses. It's knocked down mismanaged corporations. It whacked homeowners and pounded housing-based derivatives to dust. Capitalism operates by a process that the great economist Joseph Schumpeter called creative destruction. It destroys mistakes to make room for new innovations and new businesses. And I might add, new business managers. Unfortunately, this puts it at odds with government and what most people want. When people make mistakes, they maintain that they are blameless. Who could have seen this crisis coming, they ask, and they say, someone else should pay for the loss. So today, the feds, who mismanaged their regulatory responsibilities during the bubble epoch, are bailing out mismanaged corporations to protect lenders who mismanage their money. They are determined to prevent capitalism from making the necessary changes in the worst possible way. What's the worst possible way, says Bill? Simple. Leave the mismanagers in place. Keep the brain-dead companies alive, along with the zombie banks. Let the government take ownership of many sectors of the economy and stick a debt-ridden society with even more debt. The government is expected to borrow $2 trillion this year alone. From whom? And who will repay it? The Fed's effort to stop the progress of capitalism will have some spectacular consequences, which leads Mr. Bonner to dictum number 4. The severity of a depression is inversely correlated with the government's efforts to stop it. The more the Feds try to delay and distract the process of creative destruction, the longer it takes to get the job done and the higher the eventual bill. There are only two fairly clear examples in modern history, says Bill Bonner. After the crash of 1929, the Hoover and Roosevelt administrations tried desperately to stop the correction. They could not make bad debts disappear or turn bad decisions into good ones. All they could do was to retard the necessary corrections and create more mistakes. It wasn't until after World War II, 15 years later, when the New Deal was largely forgotten, that the United States got back to work. Similarly, when Japan was confronted with a major correction in 1990, its politicians followed the Hoover-Roosevelt model. Over the years, an equivalent amount to almost an entire year's output was applied to recovery efforts. But all they did was to prevent and forestall the needed changes. Now, 24 years later, the Japanese economy is still in corrective mode, still fighting deflation. Is that the end of the story? Not at all. The Fed's effort to stop the progress of capitalism will have some spectacular consequences. The fireworks will start when the bond market cracks, sending yields through the roof, for a nation addicted to debt cannot sustain a credit crisis for long. That article from Bill Bonner from thedailyreckoning.com. You're listening to Money Matters on your community radio station. We'll be back with the zombie apocalypse.
Lots of candy on my mouth.
and you're tuned to Money Matters on your community radio station, edition 224, The Zombie Apocalypse. The Zombie Apocalypse, a true story. Zombies, they are everywhere. By yours truly. From Bill Bonner's call of zombie companies allowed to live after the crisis, to zombies feeding off the flesh of your tax dollars, only a kid's video game has more beasties to kill. Companies that made bad decisions and managers who led them down the 08 and 09 crisis, like all mortally wounded entities, should have died. Allowed to die through the process called capitalistic creative destruction, their deaths would have allowed room for new growth, much like a forest fire burning out the rot. New companies, better run by better people, having learned the mistakes from the corpses in front of them, would have risen out of the ashes. Bad managers would have been fired and bad debts would have been written off. Old assets would have been procured by these new companies for cheap. And with the better business plans and better managers, would have allowed and fostered better practices, better technologies, and greater efficiencies. The natural selection Darwinism of business, the antithesis of capitalism, as Bill Bonner mentions in our previous musing. But as is usually the case, in step the bureaucrats, thinking they know better than the ancient working of Mother Nature, which is the free markets. The bureaucrats do what they do, which is their hubris, thinking they know better than Mother herself, conjure up paper confetti known as paper money, and make the dead walk again. No penalties for their transgressions, no pink slips for their stupidity, only free money to pay off their bad debts. Free money to make their balance sheets whole where Swiss cheese once stood. Free money to post phantom profits where real losses once existed. The newly minted profits allowing for incredulously, there we go, more bonuses and retention of their employment. As new zombies, these companies, which should have been long dead and buried along with the policies that allowed them to rise from the grave, are now a permanent park of the amusement. They are a permanent ride in the amusement park of economics. Amusing it would be, except for the damage it does. Distorted inflations in one place with job-crushing deflation in others. Complete classes of wage earners trampled under by the zombies, as there's never enough ammo to kill them all, let alone with the government protection they now may possess. Like a bad horror flick, the zombies know they must infect the ruling class, lest the whole takeover of the race be found out. Now, trudging through the ivory halls of our leaders, biting here and throwing meat there, so all that rule now too are infected. All munching on the flesh of those who are left, the working class. And like a bad horror film, the good guys are labeled nonconformers and dangers to the empire. They must be locked away and monitored. While the sheeple, I mean the people, call for safety in the clan, yes, among the zombies, but better safe than free, I suppose. Now here we stand, waist deep among the zombie companies and the zombies alike. Why work? Why take heed? Why not gamble? If you lose, you get more free money. If you win, you get to feast on the vast quantities of meat supplied by the others. Now there are more zombies than people, and the horde grows daily, until even those who are supposed to protect us from them call us the bad guys who stand out and the ones who must be watched. Now the working class is used as the buzzword. We must protect the people. We must protect the working class. But the people, the working class, were tossed to the meat eaters when the bailouts began. when the free money was thrown about, when the dead were allowed to live at others' expense. The working class, you are led to believe it is you they want to protect. You are led to believe it is you they want to save. You must be protected by things such as fingerprinting. To use your iPhone, place your finger on it. Fingerprinted to get a notarized signature. And even fingerprinted to gain access to such places like the family amusement park called Universal Studios. Fingerprint me to see Harry Potter? Seriously? Yes. Seriously. Need to check in at the airport? Just slide a credit card through the machine. Any credit card. Or your driver's license. Zombies are so entrenched they can now track your every move with almost any card you use. Almost anything with a magnetic strip. The zombies' calling card. A scary movie, perhaps? Most people don't seem to think so. They have accepted the zombie apocalypse in the interest of safety, by way of complacency, in spite of their freedoms being the only thing buried in the landscape. Anesthetize them with credit. If they have their bread in their circus, they will be comatose. How much credit? As much as they want. It only enslaves them more. Keep the masses in check by destroying their ability to pay for food, then become the supplier of that food. With more than half Americans receiving some sort of government assistance, that from Forbes, now open your borders and allow even more dependent constituents to solidify your power. After all, if it's power the zombies want, the more that depend on them, the fewer will demand their freedom. From the USA Today, a startling article. More than half of the nation's immigrants receive some kind of government welfare, a figure that's far higher than the native-born populations, according to a report. That's from USA Today. Also from that report, about 51% of immigrant-led households receive at least one kind of welfare benefit, including Medicaid, food stamps, school lunches, and housing assistance, compared to 30% for native-led households. That, according to the report from the Center for Immigration Studies. Those numbers increase for households with children, from 76% of immigrant-led households receiving welfare compared to 52% for the native-born. Do we dare bring things to light? If we do, we're called incompassionate or liars. But listen, movie fans, are facts not facts? Did not the hordes of barbarians just march into Rome after it burned, not needing to storm the gates? The internal collapse of the zombie paradise called Rome destroyed itself from within, a 2,000-year empire brought to total collapse, not from standing armies, but from Roman citizens standing around until it was too late. Keep in life, and keep in mind, there is no life in zombies. There's only mundane existence, feeding off the living until the entire thing dies. Zombies produce nothing. They just consume, like locusts, until their consumption brings about the desolation that provides no further feeding. The food source has all been eaten, seed corn no longer. Societies really do not wish a zombie existence. In fact, from the ashes of the zombie apocalypse always rises the call for liberty. Give us life, not death. Give us freedom, not bondage. This is how the zombies die, by the shouts and actions of those wishing to live again. But the cry is heard only when the food is gone, the seed corn no longer, the landscape so ravaged, not even the believers believe any longer. They have heard the promises that yield nothing but eventual hardship. But it's this eventual part that has to occur to convince the majority. The eventual desolation, the eventual string of broken promises, and the sting of them, and the eventual realization that things are not as they are being told that they are. Things do not work as they were told. that things only really work as they have always worked. The human race must work to persevere. There are no shortcuts. There are no free lunches. No free handouts that do not have to be paid by someone else. And there is no paradise to be had simply by the wishes of daydreamers or central planners. Foreign man, there is no central planner, nor can there ever be. Man is an individual, each his own. And in our vast numbers comes only one outcome. That outcome is only the combined wishes of all of us, and that is what makes up the world. The free markets, which are really only the sum of all the wishes of all the combined existence of all of us. And because it is not possible to know the combined wishes of all of us, the idea of central planning is a farce. It's a pipe dream. Indeed, only an illusion of the ignorant. Central planning is an oxymoron. It cannot exist. In conclusion, however, have hope. America has always been resilient. It has always risen up in the face of adversity. Remember the term creative destruction. The destruction part, although listed last in the term, is preceded by the word creative, which means out of the bad comes good. From problems come solutions. From challenges come innovation. It is not time to bet against America. It is time to examine where we are, question how we got there, and where we are going. The American spirit and the tenacity of its people will persevere. You are listening to Money Matters on your community radio station. The master, Stevie Ray Vaughan, with a Beatles tune, The Tax Man. You're tuned to Money Matters on your community radio station, airing live at 12:45 p.m. Thursday, January 7, 2016, the year of our Lord. You may be hearing a recorded version of it, as community radio stations throughout the United States pick the show up. So if you are, you won't be able to call today, 530-265-9555, if you have any questions. But that's only if you're listening live. You can always send an email to your program director for comments on the radio station's program schedule or on any of the shows, of course. But as of today, Thursday, January 7th, about 14 minutes before 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, Dow's down 382. So we'll see if 16,300 retest is in the cards the next few days. And, of course, people are looking for reasons why this is happening. Yahoo Finance has their opinion today. In an article they have put out called "The Stock Sell-Off is Happening in a Parallel Universe." From Yahoo Finance, they say, do we all live in China now? Investors could be excused for thinking that, given the indicators such as Chinese manufacturing index and the value of Chinese yuan are inducing nauseating drops in the U.S. stock market, and the surprising halt to the trading in the latest Chinese session, a mere 30 minutes after their markets opened, has thrown U.S. and European markets into a tailspin. Last we checked, however, so says Yahoo Finance, the Dow Jones and the S&P 500 indexes were composed of U.S. companies that might do some business in China, but still earn the vast majority of their revenues elsewhere. And elsewhere, economic fundamentals are looking way better than the gloomy start of this year's trading would suggest. So says Yahoo Finance. U.S. economy, they go on to say, will probably grow around 2.5% this year, which isn't great, but is a sustainable pace that seems nowhere near overheating. The economy can progress at that measured pace for a long time before the next downturn occurs. Here's some good news, at least from Yahoo Finance, about the economy. Employers have been creating an average of 220,000 new jobs per month for the last year. That robust pace seems likely to continue when the latest job numbers come out this Friday. Layoffs are at a very low level, according to the outplacement firm Challenger, Gray, and Christmas. Most workers have good job security, which boosts confidence. Car sales are on fire, hitting record levels in 2015. Purchasing a car is a big financial commitment, one U.S. consumers are obviously comfortable making. American homeowners have recovered nearly all the equity lost during the housing bust. I would ask you, have you recovered all your equity lost during the housing bust? Overall net worth, from Yahoo Finance, claims is financial assets is close to record levels. The once demolished housing market is stable again, with modest price increases, low mortgage rates, loosening credit standards, and more inventory coming in the market. Meanwhile, things are improving in Europe as well, though more slowly than here at home. Euro area unemployment is inching down. Confidence is improving, and a string of back-to-back recessions appear to be over. Greece, our favorite, the biggest source of financial turmoil in Europe, is back in the convalescent ward with an ugly but workable bailout in place. That's Yahoo Finance's opinion. Nobody thinks the U.S. or European economies are in high gear, and bears point to weakening corporate profits, tighter monetary policy by the feds, and a shrinking share of adult Americans who are even in the workforce. All valid reasons for caution, they say, but not for plunging markets. As far as the domestic economy is concerned, we see growth continuing. Wells Fargo wrote in a recent note to clients, downside volatility caused by fear and uncertainty creates buying opportunities, in our opinion. That from Wells Fargo. Takes an iron stomach to buy stocks when marks are falling, of course, but it's easier to take a look around, assess where your local economy seems imperiled, and if it's not, relax. Markets don't always reflect real economic performance, but they do experiment with rationality now and then. From Rick Newman, from Yahoo Finance. Okay, then. I've always said The markets will reflect reality eventually, but their day-to-day movements are only the sum of all the thoughts and expectations of all the players in it on any given day. And I use the example that during the housing blow up, in the beginning of the housing blow up, we saw a few hedge funds, specifically from Bear Stearns, related to mortgages, flop over. And it was kind of the beginning of the canary starting to keel over. But housing stocks continued to rise in the teeth of this, what we now know was an oncoming storm. So housing stocks continued to rise back then, although the storm was hitting. The markets had not reflected reality, but it was reflecting the expectations and the bets of all the investors that were in the market at the time. The market did reflect the reality of the housing boom eventually when housing stocks imploded. So that's why I say the markets will reflect reality eventually, but their day-to-day movements are only the sum of all the expectations and wishes and opinions of all the players in it on any given day. So portfolios can move down 2% one day, up 2% the next day. I call that market noise. Market noise. You know, my particular portfolio might move down one day and might move up the decks, and I just look at that as noise. And it might prolong move down or prolong move up. But again, it's what happens over the course, in my opinion, of a longer time period. I don't know, about 100 years, won't be around that long, but longer time periods is what is important. So we're coming to the close of the market today, which means we're coming to the close of the show. But, and we'll take a last look here on what's happening on Thursday, January 7th, 2016. Dow's down 358. Crude oil is down to $33.20 a barrel. That's got to be close to a decade low. Gold up 1.56% at 1108.90, breached the 1100 an ounce mark. And S&P down 42. Now, tomorrow's Friday. Today's show is on Thursday, so tomorrow, obviously, is Friday. So I always, myself, put a very close eye on the markets on a Friday. I don't like to see markets hammer on a Friday myself. But doesn't mean it will move one way or the other on the following Monday. It's just my little pet peeve looking on Fridays. I always get a little bit more anxious when Friday comes and the markets are showing red on Thursday. But that's me. So we will see what happens tomorrow. Most asset classes across the board, from what I can see, look to be stressed today. Funds that rise with interest rates, they seem to be not as stressed. Gold obviously up today, but most of the indices seem to be down. And looks like it's probably going to close somewhere around there. We got about 7 minutes, down 362.38. So obviously heavier cash positions will take some of the stress out of the markets if they are making you nervous. Heavier cash positions. Cash doesn't go up in an up market, doesn't go down in a down market. So heavier cash positions for nervous investors or for more conservative investors, obviously. So take a look at that and see what you think in your portfolio. And always seek the advice of an investment professional if it causes you undue stress, or you just want to turn it over to someone else. So you have been listening to Money Matters, your economic forum. And phone calls are always welcome when we're live, 530-265-9555. If you're listening to a recorded version of this, I'm sure the program director at your radio station would love to hear from you on your thoughts on his programming. So it's usually program at whatever station you're at, but you can just, our website here has emails that I'm sure most community radio stations, you can contact your program directors through there for comments and questions about the show. And we have done 224 shows here on Money Matters. And some are available. Some past shows are available. And we are on the first and third Thursdays of the month, usually. If markets rock and roll, sometimes they ask me to come in and do an additional show. So you can always look for that. And we will go on from there. Dow down 340. Dow down 340 as we close up the show. You are listening to Money Matters on your community radio station. My name is Mark Cuniverti. Now we have to remind you that discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult your investment professional before making important investment decisions. The views expressed are my opinions only. They do not necessarily reflect those of Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, KVMR, this community radio station, staff members, or underwriters. I am an investment advisor representative through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. My name's Mark. I want to thank you very much for listening today. And stay tuned for more fine programming on your community radio station. Stay tuned. We're watching the markets, so you don't have to. Have a great day.
This has been another edition of Money Matters. Please be advised that the views and opinions expressed on this show are those of myself and my guests, and are opinions only, and may not represent those of this station, its staff members, or underwriters. This show is not meant as investment advice. Consult a qualified financial advisor before making any investment decisions, and do your own research before investing. The information given on the show was obtained from a variety of public sources and is deemed accurate at time of airing, but is not guaranteed. This show was pre-recorded at an earlier date, so the market indices and related stock market references may not be accurate at the time of airing. You can order past shows or comment on our show by sending me an email at mark@moneymanagementradio.com. Money Matters is produced and recorded at the studios of KVMR FM 89.5 in Nevada City, California. You can visit our website at moneymanagementradio.com. Thanks for listening.
Yeah.